This is, just so the folks at home know, this is literally take 117. So take 117. There we go. That's right. Where's a little clappy thing? Welcome, folks, to another episode of The Security Table. I am joined by Izar and Matt, and we have a special guest, Adam Shostak, who, if you've ever done anything with threat modeling, you've definitely heard of Adam, read something he wrote, or listened to him talk, or seen him in a conference, or one of all of those many different things. And so just to set the stage, Izar wrote an email. I know it seems strange. Someone so in touch with technology would write an actual email versus sending us a Snapchat or something. I don't know.
I tried once a day.
But in this email,
sometimes.
But no, wait. The email actually comes from Slack, right?
We
have the Slack channel for the Threat Modeling Manifesto group, where we basically try to achieve we try to achieve rough consensus by questioning the things that we did the week before. And the thing that we did the week before was we released the threat modeling capabilities document, right? And Adam, as is his wont, in his blog, gave us the honor of a blurb, and he also pointed out a couple of things in there that, Adam, you take it. I'm not going to speak for you.
So, you know, in the spirit of rough consensus that we operate in, there were things that I didn't love about the capabilities doc, but wanted to get to consensus rather than having a big long argument about it. And so I wrote a little bit about the mention of attackers and the mention of risk management to add, hey, here's my perspective on these things. Should I keep going?
And that perspective is? Yeah.
That perspective don't leave us in suspense. Thinking about attackers leads to problems. And so I was a little bit, y'all were wrong. So, so very wrong.
So needless to say, that this simple statement from Adam and the way that he generally delivers these statements blew up on the Slack channel. with I think at last check there were 40 something replies and cross replies. it was worthy of debate. Although we might wonder why it wasn't debated before we released, but that's okay. It's okay.
It might have been.
It might have been. I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
And somewhere it got lost in the shuffle. So
just to ensure, let me just ensure. So we're talking about the continuing education, right? This was the part of the capabilities where it says people are encouraged and supported to become aware of new classes of threats, manifestations of threats, threat actors, new security features of their environment, and how to best apply them. So
And threat actors was specifically the point of contention.
Yeah, so it was Adam, just to confirm, when the capability says threat actor, that's what you're attributing to the attacker side.
Yes.
Yep. So I think that part of the not controversy, but part of the discussion that we had in there was what exactly did we mean by using the word attacker, because I think that we did not use the word attacker.
Attacker.
I think that some of us may have fallen into the trap of think like an attacker, and that was what we seemed to be. That was what could be understood from what we said, and then somehow we managed to pull this towards threat intel and the value or lack of thereof. And then we spoke about risk management, right? But I think that, Adam, you have a very strong position on the think like an attacker thing. And that's always worth hearing again.
Sure. So the essential thing that I have to say about think like an attacker is that nobody knows what it means, how to teach it, and it doesn't give you any structure in go ahead and do the work. So when I compare saying, you know, if I'm going to ask you, Azar, to think like an attacker or give me three spoofing threats against this system, I can teach you how to give me three spoofing threats. I can show you what reasonable answers to that question look like. Think like an attacker is so open-ended that if we want to have people across an organization threat model every story, we've got to give them something beyond think like an attacker as they do it.
Yep. Yeah. So can I maybe, I just want to loop in here something that Izzer said in the past ages ago, and you know, that we should be teaching principles, right? And I think what you're highlighting for, and just for, you know, our viewers and listeners, by thinking like an attacker, you're trying to get in the mindset of the people who are looking to exploit a system, as opposed to understanding the technologies involved and understanding what principles are being violated in that, right? And one you can predict, the other one, one you can predict and the other one you can't, or rather there are so many variations of the attacker mentality that you can easily lose track of things. That's how I interpret your statements around thinking, why thinking like an attacker is bad.
And so I
usually bring that back to the
No, go ahead, Azar.
No, Adam, please go.
We have lag here, so there's pauses as we tell each other to go. So I'll go.
It's us thinking. It's us thinking. We are just pondering. Oh.
Use the force, Cesar.
These are very deep thoughts. We need time between them.
So I started with the think like an attacker is bad. And then started to expand that to why are we thinking so much about attackers? What are the pros and cons of thinking about attackers? And one of the things is, while it's hard to think like an attacker in general, it's also apparently really hard to think like a specific attacker. And I don't want, you know, my former colleagues at Microsoft are having a bad week, but so no shade on them, but Microsoft has a whole threat intelligence center, which includes a bunch of really smart people who spend a lot of time thinking about how do specific attackers work. And they had to file a report with the SEC this week or last week about what they missed. And so, again, I really don't mean to cast shade on people who I enjoyed working with, who are smart and dedicated folks. But if they can't do this and drive their defenses where they need to be, what hope does a smaller organization that doesn't run its own threat intelligence center have? Or what happens if you miss an attacker who should be on your list? And so going back to what you said, Matt, if we think about the technology and the principles that we want it to have or the properties we want it to have, that may be a better route to what we want than thinking like attackers or thinking about attackers.
Yeah, and you're spot on, I think, about the threat intelligence discussion, part of that discussion. You're only as good as the intelligence you have, and if there's a new attacker group, you're not going to have a priori knowledge of their capabilities. I'm thinking about the MITRE ATT&CK framework is only self, it's only what organizations that feed information into that framework provide is the attacker's body of knowledge that you would have, and any private threat feeds and whatnot. And so, how do you predict what's possible, what somebody's going to do, what somebody's going to go after, and be good enough? Right to question four. Is our
I'm just waiting to see if Adam's going to. No, okay. So the thing for me is that at the end of the day, what we're trying to do here, bringing it back to threat modeling, is threat elicitation, right? So we do the whole system modeling, and now we think, okay, what could go wrong? And we are feeding from all kinds of things. And in the past, I have been very vocal about, for example, threat libraries, which I compare to driving, looking at the rear view mirror, because basically you are moving forward, but you're looking at the things that already happened to you, right? And the think like an attacker for me has always been the put me in the kitchen and tell me to think like a chef, but order the pizza because nothing is going to come out of it because I don't know what a chef does. I don't know the techniques. I don't know how to put the ingredients together. So nothing's going to come out of it. But then this threat intel thing came into view, and we had this very interesting thing happen on X, I think it was. I don't know. It might have been Twitter at the time. And somebody said, there's no need for threat modeling anymore because threat intel is going to do it all, right? Threat intel is going to kill threat modeling. After I came back from the floor, where for some reason I was rolling around laughing, I don't know, might be connected, might not be connected, I don't know. I started to think about that a bit more, and the idea that threat intel does have some kind of value for threat modeling came to me in terms of, you know what, I can think of principles. I can think of libraries. But there is new stuff coming in. And there is chaining of old stuff coming in. And there is value to see what's happening in the world and see how that can inform my threat elicitation. And more than that, I think that, and here's where the risk conversation comes in. When we start talking about if I can in real time see what's the next wave of attacks coming in, I can use that to calibrate who might want to attack me as a specific customer, a specific organization, and say, okay, these are the techniques that are being pointed my way, so I can build stronger drawbridges and deeper moats in between me and those techniques. But again, I see that all as a continuum and not as one specific thing that's going to take place. So the thing like an attacker to me turned into take a look at what the attackers are doing and use that to inform your practice. And then we started talking about risk.
Yeah, don't go to risk yet. We're not done with this.
Yeah, don't go.
We're not doing risk yet.
Let Adam respond to the whole threat intel thing, though. I'm curious what his thoughts are.
So, it's challenging because on the one hand, I totally agree with we can use the threat intel to check our work. We can use the threat intel to say let's emphasize this defense. And so the question that I have is not the sort of theoretical could we. The question I have is what works better? What works for, do we use threat intelligence when we're threat modeling operations? When we're updating operational defenses and more general principles as we design, the one of the things we talked about in the manifesto, and I forget the exact words we ended up with, is being reflective enough while still getting stuff done. And I think this is an example of that. Is what is the role of threat actors? And this is why I didn't, you know, try and stop the capabilities from coming out, is because we can have these useful conversations about it. But for me, my overall thinking is we've had, see, CERT was launched in 1988 in the aftermath of the Morris worm. We've got ISAC, we've got CERTs, we've got ISACs, we've got ISOWs, we've got all of these information sharing initiatives to try and get threat intelligence to the people who need it. And maybe it is bending the curve so that things are not going badly as much as they would have if we didn't have the threat intel. But I don't think it's changing the direction of the curve and saying we're actually getting better at defense. And I definitely think it's not doing that in proportion to the energy that it gets.
Yeah, I think that, if I may, I think that that happened. I think that, and I'm not a SOC analyst. I'm never have been. But I have a sense that the reason for that is because, especially like ISACs and other organizations that share threat intelligence, that really helps with detection more so than defense, right? It's really how to recognize attacks. Hey, a so-and-so organization indicates that they were attacked in this way. And oh, if you're a similar business or you're running similar technologies, be on the lookout for this. Not here's, you know, necessarily, you know, what firewall rules to put in place or how to re-architect an application on the fly to avoid the vulnerabilities that they're leveraging, right? By and large, those are long-term things as opposed to the ISAC, the threat intelligence sharing role is, hey, this came for us. Look out for it coming for you too.
So I want to go a little more fundamental here. I want to go back to the capability, because when I look at the capability, I don't believe the capability is prescribing think like an attacker. I agree and have taught, I've heard Adam. Adam's the one who introduced me to how we need people to think like security people and not like attackers. And so I've taught that way after. So I agree with Adam on that core thing. But when I look at the capability, what I see in the capability is we're saying that we want a solid threat modeling program to inform people that are doing threat modeling about and make them aware of new classes of threat actors. And so when I think about this, like one of the things that I put in the fundamental security training that I used to be a part of the company that did that, was always introducing people to at least the common categories of threat actors. So nation states, cyber criminals, anonymous. Whoa. Matt's dog is not agreeing with that. Apparently I said the wrong category again.
He's like, dogs are threat actors.
I would always introduce
actors
people
too
to the high level categories. That's what
dogs
he was saying.
Are threat actors
so
too.
We'll add dogs to that list. So dogs, nation states, cyber criminals, you know, people that want to burn the world down. But I always taught people at least that here, just to make them aware, because one of the worst things I found is people are sitting there going, nobody would ever want to attack us. We had that phase, right? And so making them aware of what those are. And so that's what I think the capability is saying, is make people aware as new classes of attackers come out, don't think like an attacker. But I want to get Adam's take on that.
Yeah. And let's quote here. Right. So it says people are encouraged and supported in becoming aware of new classes of threats, manifestations of threats, threat actors, new security features of their environment. So I think you're absolutely right in that the general statement is not about thinking like an attacker. And my question is, do we get all excited that dogs are not on our list of threat actors? Because they can bite and they can poop on the rug and there's relevant threats there.
They love to be on your keyboard.
So I have an answer for that one.
Okay.
So a lot of times, and I'm sure that this happened to you guys too, when you're threat modeling and you find threats, or you think that you found a threat, somebody's going to look at you and say, but who would probably possibly do that, right? And I think that it's very easy today to say, you know what, perhaps today nobody would, but tomorrow you never know. So perhaps having that awareness that the threat actor and the classes of threats may change, at the end of the day, informs the fact that things that we chose to push down in the priority list perhaps come up because all of a sudden it's easier to exploit, I don't know, cache, L3 cache bugs, right? Which yesterday we said, hey, this is really difficult to do. We don't care.
I mean, an even better example, think about what GPUs did to password cracking. Before GPUs, we had to run password crackers for decades to try to get something. All of a sudden, you have a new
all
technology.
All kinds of gadgets.
so little time.
So I want to go back to what Azar said about the no one would ever do that. Because I think that thinking is common. And it's dangerous because if you don't happen to know about something that an attacker is doing because it was sent under TLP red and you can't talk about it with other people without permission, it distorts things to be so focused on what are people doing today versus what could they do, what defenses could we put in place. And there's a lot of nuance in this one. There's a lot of subtlety. And when I think about subtlety and I think about scaling, I think it's hard to – subtlety is a nuance. These are things that experts bring to the table. And if we're going to scale to the size of the companies that we've all worked for in the past, you know, if I were to throw a dart and hit a random Cisco employee or a random Microsoft employee and ask them questions like this about how to use attackers in threat modeling, I don't expect I'm going to get a nuanced answer. And that's no disrespect, right? They're smart in whatever it is they're doing for their employer. But this is nuance. This is the fun stuff that we as experts get to talk about. I'm curious how you all think about that in terms of what do you do at a program level?
So I'd like to respond to that with... And that reinforces the need for education, I think, which is why I think its placement in the capabilities is useful, at least so it's accounted for. So I'm not going to answer your question directly just yet, but I do want to highlight. Well, I want to highlight something else that we talked about on the Slack thread, pertinent to this, in terms of. We have threat actors so the Threat Modeling Manifesto and the capabilities are covering both privacy and security. And by and large, we talk about attackers in terms of security because those are the defenses, you know, people coming from the internet and attacking systems. And one of the things that threat actors and pertinent to what you just described about, you know, pick a random employee from a company and, you know, what are they thinking about in terms of you know, if you ask them, you know, where do attackers fit in their threat model, or actors fit in the threat model, they're probably not thinking about the inadvertent actor where information bleeds to that introduces privacy risk as an example, or privacy threats. And so, and it's not strictly that, but certainly there is a need for understanding that actors exist in the model, that there's a lot of actors that exist in the model that we most of the time ignore, right? Because we don't necessarily care about the person who maintains the building or the person who maintains the network physical infrastructure, or somebody who manages billing for the company that we where the colo is, right? And yet those are places where information can bleed to introduce privacy concerns. So having a place where threat actors, not attackers, can exist, and providing that education so that you can get better quality models and analysis is, I think, what we tried to go for. That's at least what I thought we were trying to go for. And hopefully that's why I think that's where we will succeed if we focus on that as opposed to.
That was the rough consensus. Yeah.
Sorry. I needed to get that point in. And I wasn't sure how you opened the door. So there it is.
Drove right through it.
And let me just pick up on something you said, which is actors exist,
sure,
and we normally ignore them in the model. Because this is one of those things that when I train people, they're like, but I could put this in the model, and I could put this in the model, and I could put this in the model. Where do I stop? And again, one of the things about experience and expertise is that the four of us have ideas about, oh, I should pull this thing that we normally leave out because models leave out details. I should pull this one in now. And this is really a matter of training. It's a matter of experience. It's a matter of maturity in your practice. And that is so hard to develop. So I love that you're bringing in this point in light of the capabilities, because the capabilities are explicitly not a maturity model, but we start to see how capabilities interrelate with maturity.
Yeah, and that was something that Matt was one of the people who, and Jonathan Marcel were both the two that were keeping us honest when it came to, I don't know how many times Matt in the dialogue about the capabilities was like, it's starting to sound like a maturity. That sounds like maturity. Like, we should have had it on record so you could just push a button. Beep. That's maturity. But it was a good point, because, like, it, to Adam's point, like, it was so easy to drift from capability into, mm-hmm, what if we did it this way, but then they could do it this other way that would be better. And we just naturally went down the maturity path. And folks, mm-hmm, like Matt and Jonathan kept pulling us back, saying, nope, come on, circle back around. It's zero or one. Either do it or you don't.
Yeah, even Brooke got into it, which was great.
So let's talk risk management then. Let's go there. You are set it up. You were dying to get to this 15 minutes ago, and I turned the corner back around and did a U-turn. So go ahead and take us back onto the street.
No, it was 15 minutes ago. I don't remember anymore.
There's no risk.
It's a risk. But I think that where we were going was that there was another mention in there of another thing that we try to keep away from the capabilities, and actually I think that we try to keep away from the manifesto itself, and it was the idea of risk. But at some point, we just had to go there, right? And I think that if we dive this whole threat actor and attacker thing, I think that in the view of the big question, who would ever do this? Which is when we translate this probability thing to developers. And all of a sudden we can say, oh, look at these guys here. They are doing it on that other company. So the probability just went up, right? And the impact is going to be different for every company, of course. But it's already a recognition of risk. Even if we are not using the term, even if we are not putting it out there. So my question is, as we all, I think, converged into considering risk management a very separate part from threat modeling, which once was not true, and actually in some methodologies it's still very much not true. Those two things are very linked there. Where do we land now with risk management and threat modeling?
So I'm an extremist again, and my extreme...
I'm shocked.
My extremist view is that risk quantification is the path to the dark side. When we start putting numbers on risk, what we do, and by risk specifically, what I mean here is likelihood and impact as the quantified factors. When we do that, we create things that are listed as high risk, right? Either high impact, high probability, or some combination that leads you to whatever your bar for high is. And it ignores the cost of fixing. It ignores whether the thing being changed is in a change state where we're making updates to it or a fixed state where we're not. And so what we end up with is the security people using a risk number get all worked up about something that the organization isn't going to touch. And that leads to anger. And anger leads to hatred. Hatred leads to the dark side.
So, Adam, I want to take a quick for our listeners who may not be familiar with these terms. You said likelihood.
I'm quoting Yoda.
And impact. Oh, I know you are. likelihood and impact as a measure of risk, and usually that's done in terms of dollar amounts and loss event probabilities and whatnot. That is different from severity, which is ease of exploitation and impact, but at a different level, correct? I just want to make sure we're on agreement in that, and that if folks have questions about that, that there are two different terms. We talk about severity a lot in threat modeling. What you're suggesting is risk being distinct is something to be wary and potentially avoided in that conversation.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, both are different from priority, which is at the end of the day what we end up telling people to actually pay attention to.
Yes.
So where do we land now? What do we give people?
Adam respond. Yeah.
No, I agree with what you're saying, right? Severity is not risk, and priority is not severity. But when we make statements like teams use threat modeling to understand and appropriately quantify risk, period. Again, rough consensus versus Adam's extremist views.
Is it appropriate that threat modeling should inform risk? So the second sentence there is the organization uses threat modeling to inform and adapt its risk profile.
Yeah, that was sort of Jonathan's excellent editing to get my perspective in here. I think about the classic risk management of mitigate, eliminate, accept, and transfer. And I like to start that with mitigate, because mitigate, what are we going to do about it, precedes eliminate, accept, transfer as things we do when mitigation is hard.
Or costly. I always thought
that we are missing a sweep under the rug at that scale. But, yeah.
Isn't that accept? I mean, is that basically accept?
No. Sweep under the rug is definitely not accept. swept under the rug is, let's not talk about it anymore, okay?
For all the corporate people here that have to file, you know, reports and things like that, please just ignore what Izar said for the last 60 seconds. For your good and for ours, this is a public service announcement from the security table.
Sweep it under the rug. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that...
Was that see no evil?
Well, actually, it's more like see no evil. But one of the things that's important to say in terms of the capabilities document is that one of the big things that was leading us throughout the work was we were trying to be concise. And I think that when that editing happened and risk appeared that way, I think that we opted to use language that most of the interested people would be able to read, recognize, and understand for varying values of understanding. I have to disable this thing somehow.
I think you need to leave it on.
It's so funny for us.
I'm getting a Linux laptop. That's it.
Where's the? Can you go do this?
Yeah, bring the fireworks.
Come on.
Well, that's the laser. That's the laser show. That's the dark side. That's me doing Palpatine, the Emperor.
I think if you're going to do that, Azar, you need to do it like this.
Yeah, but nothing happens. I tried. Nothing happens.
Live long and prosper, dude.
My computer does feel a bit more blessed right now, but...
Sounds like a
bottle and prosper. All right. Well, where do we land here, Adam, on this whole risk management thing? Like, what's... Like, give us a... Let's kind of wrap this to it towards a conclusion from your side.
I don't know. Why do I have to conclude?
It's a risk you're running.
It is acceptable to say, don't do this capability.
rug.
So I think that I'm not quite at the thing I'm going to say next. But when I started talking about how think like an attacker was a bad thing to say, I was almost literally called a heretic. I am running in the direction of a lot of the ways we talk about risk management have been taken as axiomatic rather than as testable statements. And I think the thing we should start to do is start to evaluate if the jump to risk management tools, who does it serve and how does it serve them? And who does it hurt and how does it hurt them? Right, because there's definitely people who are like, "Ooh, I get to do risk math now. That's fun." And I don't mean to be unfair to them. thank you, Matt. I appreciate that.
Unintended.
but we should
figure
out.
Where are my coins?
we should figure out if it helps us be more secure. We should figure out if the risk assessments we're making are helping the organization make decisions faster, better. I think we need to be rigorous in asking if this is a good thing or a bad thing, rather than just Adam has one opinion, Matt has another opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we think about risk management in reality, it's very different than what we think of as threat modeling. in, for example, in big companies. Big company, and we've talked about this on the security table before. Risk management is a whole department that's like, what if a hurricane hits the path the trucks drive our supply chain items through? Like, they're so much bigger than thinking about what are the bad things that could happen to a given piece of software, a user story, for example. And so I've definitely become more enlightened on that first statement under risk management. And I don't like that as much as I think I, before I was kind of like, it's fine. I don't like it as much now. Just as we've kind of dug into it more, but it'll give us something to discuss at the, you know, capabilities family reunion next year. Mm-hmm. All right, Matt Izar, any final thoughts from you before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the place where I landed with this whole thing is that as a threat model practitioner, when I think about it, I want to be able to participate in a threat modeling exercise and taking input from the real world, things that I may not be aware of, that I may not know are happening or are new or stuff like that, but up to the point of how that influences the things that I'm building. Less, as Adam said in the thread, I don't want to know about APT 694 and where, in which base they sit in wherever country they sit. I want to know what they are doing that I hadn't seen before and how that influences my internal sorting algorithm of what's important or not. At the same time, from the risk side of things, as a practitioner, I want to be useful. And if I have risk management people come to me and say, you are not giving me enough information so that I can calculate a risk number, that's one question that I have to deal with somehow. But at the immediate level, what I should be able to do is to give the people who are writing code, who are putting systems into place, deploying and testing them, a list of priorities of the things that I think that in terms of security, these are the most important ones to do before the 10,000 other ones, right? And now I need to develop a way to back these perhaps with hard data or with numbers or whatever, so that I can explain to the right public why am I telling them that thing. Does that make sense out of my head?
Sufficient. Sure, if it makes sense to you.
Matt scale is like sufficient or not insufficient, and that's it. Like, that's all he gives you.
Acceptable.
Okay, Mr. Data here on the program. You know, that's a sufficient answer. So
I guess the only answer I'm going to give here is that the capabilities are like a model. They're meaningful. They have to have meaning and value to the people who are using it. They are things that are measurable. They are things that we think are going to be valuable to those who use them. And we'll see. Some of them may not be may not be of interest to some. We may see that risk management doesn't get as much traction as we expect, or maybe there's a nuance we missed. And that's certainly fine, right? This is version one. Anybody who adopts these capabilities will almost certainly see an improvement in their ability to have a program for threat modeling that is effective for them. And whether that's ignoring actors, looking at attacker data, using threat intelligence, informing or driving risk, it's all positive.
True. Very true.
Yeah, good. Good way to wrap it up there for us. So, Adam, anything you want to point our audience towards? I know you've written a bunch of things in the past and are always writing new things for the future. So, anything you want to point the audience to?
Just in the space of what should people learn, one of the things that I talked about in the threats book. So I'll point people to the threats book and I'll point people towards the end of it where I talk about genres of music versus new songs, right? And I think of the threats. Thank you. Thank you. I think of the threats as genres, rock and roll, jazz, and there's a new song every day. And I think it's important to understand what the genres are more than, and look, it's great to get excited about a new song or a new threat, but the context is the thing that I think is really important. And as Matt was saying about the capabilities document, getting, maturing our thinking, moving away from, I think, to here's evidence that this works or that works, is really the place I'd love to see everyone go.
The lovely thing about the music genres analogy is that you got the whole thing going, and then all of a sudden they find bits and pieces of an old Beatles recording, and then you have a hit. So things that nobody paid attention to before, all of a sudden they come together in a different way, and bang, you have another thing that you have to pay attention to.
Getting ready for the AI deepfake.
All right. Well, thanks, folks, for listening to another episode of the Security Table. Adam, thanks for joining us and just walking through these issues with us. And we'll have you back at some point in the future to talk and discuss something else around the Security Table.